the Bolivian Andes. Welcome to the GCN Show.
Welcome to the GCN Show.
Coming up this week, I will be explaining why my face looks like this. And by that, I mean the cuts and bruises as opposed to the normal kind of look. And because of it, we'll be asking the question, is cycling really America's most dangerous sport? Because according to a new analysis, it is.
Plus, why Mathieu van der Poel might be doing an Ironman, the world's first aluminium velodrome, the country that's introduced a 6 km/h speed limit for cyclists, and the introduction of the cycling-specific condom.
Really?
Really. This week in the world of cycling, we learned that a modern superlight road bike is even more versatile than we first thought. So it turns out that the European Cyclocross Championships were won by Tonarts on an Orbea Orca.
This has blown my mind, Dan. It really has. And also, gotta say, it shows how far gravel bikes have evolved, that Aerts would rather race cross on a road bike than a gravel bike.
Yeah. No suspension in sight.
Across
just yet, anyway. We also learned this week that after 2.5 years, Mathieu van der Poel is back on Strava and his first activity...
Let me guess. A dog walk. Actually, no. He's not a loser.
Ooh. No, thank you, Si. I feel I need to point out to you today, actually, that dog walks are very safe activities.
Well, but anyway, I don't know about that. Maybe go on.
Van der Poel's actual first activity for 2.5 years was a run. A 33-minute 10K run.
I wonder why he chose that as his activity.
I've got weird, really weird.
Very weird, yeah. His training partner, by the way, Freddie Ovett, also took to Instagram last week to say that Van der Poel will do an Ironman if the post gets 100,000 likes.
Yeah. Happily for him, it's only at 91,000 as we record this, although unhappily for him, I'd imagine it's going to be over 100,000 by the time this show goes out. Now, everything that we've just said is really just a distraction, of course, from what you're all really wanting to know out there, which is, what on earth has happened to your face, Si? It's not as pretty as it usually is.
Oh, thanks, mate. I'll take that as a compliment. Well, it shall probably come as no surprise to anyone that this was, of course, cycling-related.
Yeah. Were you racing away from cows,
Si? I was not racing away from cows. No cows were involved with this face. Well, actually, that would have been a better story.
Well, it would have been, but crack on with the story.
It's going to be
like, dying to know.
I was being chased by a herd of cows and I rode into a barbed wire fence. No, so I was out on my my cyclocross bike on Saturday morning and it was really wet. So it poured with rain here in the UK all Friday, and then on Saturday there was no trace of surface water, but it was a little bit slick. I made that age-old mistake of going a little bit hard, thinking, I am on a good day today. Like, I love the feeling of sliding your wheels over mud, particularly on a cyclocross bike. And anyway, cut long story short, I lost the front end on a route that I hadn't seen,
right.
And there was a tree right in front of me, and I made that instinctive decision to push my bike one way, so that my body went the other side of the tree. But because my hands were still holding onto the handlebars, there was nothing to put out in front of my face. So my face went into the ground and I went sort of like off the mud and into the bushes, which were a bit brambly, a bit sticky, and just generally, So there's a bit of surface injury. I possibly had a little bit of light concussion.
Did you?
Maybe. But yeah, I just felt like... Yes.
Are you mentioning the concussion bit so I can't take the mick for the rest of the show? Is it really mild?
To be fair, mate, you could probably take the mick out of me using the same joke and I wouldn't remember end of the show is at the beginning.
Well, I'm glad it wasn't worse, Si.
Thanks, mate.
But I bet you felt a little bit silly.
I did. Yes, that's exactly how I felt. Very silly, very embarrassed.
Understandable. Yes. I mean, I'm glad it wasn't worse, as I said.
Thanks, yeah.
At least this way, I can be outwardly amused.
Yes.
For some time.
You know, the worst bit for me, other than having to go home and confront my family with my new face was the fact that you need to regale the story to everybody that sees you. And it just so happened that I saw a lot of people at the weekend.
Presumably you mean anyone that knows you. I'm assuming you're not saying random strangers what happened as soon as you see them.
Well, to be fair, I was out walking the dogs and a homeless guy asked me what happened to my face. So anyway, he seemed quite happy the fact that I'd been attacked by a bramble.
Okay.
Well, not like happy that I'd been attacked, but you know what I mean.
But it wasn't worse, yeah.
Yes, basically. Anyway, as it so happens this weekend, I also came across an article on the internet about how cycling is America's most dangerous sport.
Yeah, you said this in the intro. The most dangerous sport sounds implausible.
Well,
really?
I know, yeah, that's exactly what I thought. I do think that this research is to be taken with a pinch of salt. It's not peer-reviewed science.
Right.
But nevertheless, they looked at some actual data. So the National Safety Council's Injury Facts Database. Sounds like fun, doesn't it? For 2023 and 2024. And they focused on emergency department-treated sports injuries. And they then worked out a sports danger score, which combined total injuries, annual changes, and then injury rates, crucially, per 100,000 participants.
Right. So we know cycling's top of the list based on what you said, but what is the list?
Well, so cycling is top of the list with a danger score of 88.22.
It's high, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what it's out of.
100, you just said.
Is it? Did I just say it? I told you. I'm a bit confused. Anyway, it's ahead of basketball, which is in second with 77. Mm. Okay. American football is in third with 67, just ahead of proper football, soccer, you might know it as, with 59. Interestingly, though, and this is also why I'm casting doubt on this list, swimming is in at number six.
How do you injure yourself swimming, apart from drowning?
Yeah, quite. Slipping over at the side of the pool, maybe. So, yeah. And then, weirdly, fishing is the eighth most dangerous sport in the USA.
Oh, man, this is so weird.
Yeah.
Although, like you said, we should be careful with this list. But it is undeniable that cyclists do get injured, case in point, as this idiot next to me proves, obviously. But it's quite funny, really, because I actually also found an article last week about cycling and health, and researchers in Japan this time are the latest to show just how beneficial cycling is in terms of long-term health. So a total of around 10,000 participants were followed for between 6 and 10 years, and they found that those who rode their bikes through the entirety of that study had a far lower risk of both functional disability and mortality compared to non-cyclists, even after adjusting for various social, demographic, clinical and lifestyle factors.
Yeah, and there are also huge benefits, weren't there, to those who took up cycling during the study period.
Yeah.
Particularly, we should say, the group had an average age of 74.
Yeah, it was the older cohort.
Exactly. So, they were actually, some of them were forced to give up driving and take up cycling instead.
Yep. So we know that cycling is incredibly good for your health, obviously, short-term and long-term, physical and mental as well. As long as you avoid falling off. It's the first of many, Si.
Yeah.
I think there are a few things happening here, personally. So you and I both come from a background of competition, of racing.
Yeah, slowly, but racing.
And it's very hard to change that mentality, even when you're out riding alone or with mates as you were on Saturday. You want to go fast. You want to push the limits of the bike you're on. You want to push your own limits, basically.
I do. I genuinely do, about every time I go out.
I can see. And then the other thing is that you're getting older.
We're getting older.
We're getting older, okay. Yeah. That means that our reaction times are getting slower, and then our recovery times from injury, unfortunately, are getting longer.
Hold up. Are you saying that I'm not as good as I think I was?
Pretty much that, yes.
Yeah, okay, thanks.
You remember when I broke my ankle a few years ago?
I do indeed, yes. I think you made quite a meal out of it.
Well, I probably did, but that was genuinely a very, very painful experience. Anyway, the doctors at the time told me it would take 8 weeks to recover from the surgery I had, and I immediately told myself, well, for me, that'll be 5 weeks, maximum six, because you're used to recovering quicker than doctors tell you will. But guess what? It took me a full 8 weeks to recover.
Hmm.
And my point is that the older you get, the more likely you are to crash if you continue to push hard, and the longer it's going to take you to recover when you do crash. It's kind of a lose-lose situation.
I mean, I do get that, although I'm not entirely sure I agree with you're likely to crash more as you get older, because you're also more skillful. I mean, I'm just saying, like, you know, I've now been riding mountain bikes and gravel bikes for, you know, 30 years. I'm probably getting as close to perfection as... No, I don't know, but you know what I mean? Like, yeah, maybe I am getting not as good as I was. But there's also still the need to, like, to live your life, isn't there, right? So there are so many things that you do in life that involve an element of risk. Yeah. And if you try to eliminate as many of those risks as you can... Obviously, some of them like make complete sense. Like I put a seatbelt on when I drive my car. Of course I do. But when it comes to things like cycling and, you know, I think life might not be quite as fun.
Right.
And also, as well, I've got this funny feeling, as I said to my wife when I came home sheepishly on Saturday morning, that if I stopped doing things that have a slight element of risk, then I would probably just get run over by a bus. Or trip over in the kitchen and bang my head. Do you know what I mean? I just, sod's law, if I gave up the things that I love doing, something horrendous would happen doing something utterly menial and trivial.
Making you very all right. I'm with you on this to a degree, your ethos here, but there's a fine balance, isn't there, really? What I do know is that if you're in any way focused on like health span and longevity, the last thing that you want to do is be laid up for 10 weeks, unable to do anything, because you've been an idiot.
Can you please stop calling me an idiot now?
No. Well, I can do. Well, I'm going to keep calling you an idiot for your crash.
All right, fair. Okay.
I'm just saying that the older you are, the harder it is to bounce off the road and to bounce back to full health and fitness. The more you stay consistent, the better. And consistency, in my experience, is enhanced greatly if you stay rubber side up, i.e. don't crash.
Okay. But I've got to say, is it any way to live, trying to live forever?
Well, this is something I'm trying to ponder with myself at the moment.
Well, I know. I remember you questioning it one Monday morning because you'd come back and done VO2 max intervals whilst running in the rain. And you thought, well, if I have to do this every week for the rest of my life, I don't want to live forever. But no, like, I just don't think wrapping yourself in cotton wool is the best way to approach life. Now, I'm not advocating that we all take up base jumping, but I just don't think cycling needs to be dangerous.
Here's kind of what you make. I've got my own anecdote on this, actually. So you remember I did that gravel ride with Connor back in January?
When you were on an e-bike, that gravel ride.
I was on an e-bike, yes, but that's not relevant to this particular anecdote.
Because you broke your ankle whilst riding an e-bike.
There was that as well, yes. Anyway, we were going down quite a fast descent with some fairly big rocks. It wasn't like traditional type gravel. And I was partly wishing at the time that I had suspension, whilst also... pushing the limits.
Gnarly.
Pushing the limits.
Yeah.
And then I hit something that threw me offline, and I was so close to crashing.
Really?
I was so close. It was one of those real heart-in-mouth moments which, through luck, I would say, more than judgment, I managed to get out of and stay on the bike. But I was just thinking to myself, what are you doing? Like, what are you doing? It wasn't a race. There was nobody there to impress. I was just going too fast. And the consequences of a crash on that terrain... could have been really, really quite bad. Needless to say, I took things a hell of a lot easier for the rest of the ride.
But you were having fun though, weren't you?
Until that point, yeah.
Yeah.
And then reality kicked in.
Exactly. To be fair though, taking it a bit easier for the rest of the ride, I mean, there is a lesson in that, isn't it? Which is, when riding in dangerous situations, it's probably worthwhile backing off just a shade, isn't it? Like, not all the time, but... I don't know, there's like warp speed, isn't there, when you're hanging on thinking like, oh my God, this is the limit. And then there's like almost warp speed where you think, this is great, but I've got a little bit of a margin there. Whether that's on a gravel descent or down an alpine road, which is often like fairly dangerous, you've got to say. But if, like me, you also love doing that, then, you know.
But sometimes I think you just need to give yourself a mental kick back into reality of what's sensible, especially at our age again.
Sorry. No, stop. Well, this, was it
this,
age
this,
thing?
This goes, again, I remember back at that Girona Gravel World Series that I did. The reason I started going slower down the descent was because of the horrific injuries I was going past on these descents. Without them, I might have just carried on. I might have been one of the injured people on the side of the road. But because of what I saw, I was like, I do not want to be in that position. So just knock it down a notch. Because you're not going to win this race anyway.
Well, and to be fair, you can still have amazing fun and get an adrenaline
rush.
Well,
I didn't.
By not... Well, I know you had a crap day that day, didn't you? But, like, do you know what I mean? Like, generally speaking, like, I can ride down an alpine descent now and not be at the limits of my bike.
And still have fun.
And still have an awful lot of fun. And, yeah. I was thinking on Saturday morning that I was basically like Matthew Van Der Poel and, you know... That
well, you should have been
well.
Like Matthew Van Der Poel and gone out for a 10K run, Si.
To be fair, as my son kindly pointed out, he's like, didn't Matthew Van Der Poel fall off at the Olympics that time? And I was like, yes, he did! So that even happens to him as well. Yeah.
Right then, over to you guys at home. How much do you think we should hold back as we get older in order to stay safe? If at all, do you actually think it's good to continue to push the limits and live life to the full without constantly thinking of the dangers that are around every corner?
Yeah, let us know in the comments section down below. He also crashed, to be fair, when he won the World Championships on the road, didn't he? Pushed it on that corner a little bit quick. Yeah. Yeah, and he crashed twice in that Mountain Bike World Cup this year, didn't he, in Nove Mesto?
Yeah. But everyone competing has a fair few crashes. We're not competing much anymore, Si.
Well, that does come back to your point about we used to race.
I bet he doesn't crash that much around his local woods.
Anyway. He might do. Yeah.
And now it's time for cycling shorts.
Cycling shorts now. I'm going to start with the news that Arizona has just unveiled the world's first aluminium velodrome, which does frankly look like a spaceship that has crash-landed in the desert.
Apparently, they chose this unusual material to withstand the sun and heat while still keeping it open to the elements. And I've got to say, it looks wild.
It does, doesn't it? Yeah. You probably need sunglasses when you're riding on
probably,
it.
Probably, yeah.
No chance of splinters if you crash. No. Although... has anyone who has ever gone down a fast slide wearing shorts or a T-shirt, watch out for burns.
Yeah.
If you fall off.
Yeah. Another reason to wrap yourself up in cotton wool. It does put Tucson, Arizona even more on the map as a cycling hotspot, though, because you might remember that Ollie and Hank went there a few years ago and they absolutely loved it, didn't they?
Yeah, banging burritos, Dan. Well, that's one of the other things that they said. Now, while life for Tucson cyclists is looking increasingly rosy, less so... for Slovakia's cyclists. So the hunt for the next Peter Sagan might have got a little bit harder after the government there has just introduced a 6 km/h speed limit for cycling, skating and scootering on the pavement.
Interesting. So for adults, this seems slightly extreme, but perhaps understandable.
Yeah.
However, it's enforceable with a €100 fine, which seems bonkers when you think about it, because where are the kids going to ride?
I know, this is like, the collateral damage with this is they obviously haven't thought about kids learning to ride bikes or like, right, anyway, absolutely bonkers. Hopefully, the police use their discretion with enforcing this one, because it definitely seems like another example of some rather binary political thinking, isn't it? It's like walking and driving, but then nothing else really matters.
No, true. Well, that certainly seems like it's the case in Berlin, Si. Segue there. So an article in British paper The Guardian brought this to our attention. The administration for the city has increased the speed limit from 30 km/h to 50 on city streets and rolled back on funding allocation for active travel infrastructure.
That's right. So a bit of political point scoring, I think, going on. So a government spokesperson said, and I quote, "The goal is to renovate and expand infrastructure for all modes of transport. To those who still believe that Berlin can be supplied by cargo bikes, the car belongs in Berlin. We are making sure the city functions."
It's going to be quite interesting to see what happens there then, really, isn't it?
It is indeed. I feel like we know what happens when we expand car infrastructure now, but anyway.
You know very well, don't you?
Well, I do, because I've done lots of research. Yeah, I don't know.
Right, change of gear now and on to some tech news. So the UCI have just said that they will allow 32-inch wheels in mountain bike competition. We know at first glance this might not seem particularly relevant to roadies and gravel riders, but mark our words, what happens on mountain bike does not stay on mountain bike.
Nope. Gravel riders, listen up. There's a lot of tech that's come over mountain bike, isn't there? Yeah. The exact quote from the UCI was, "The Mountain Bike Commission has always considered that mountain bikes are the laboratory of cycling, with very limited rules regarding equipment."
The idea with these wheels, we should say, is that bigger wheels roll over bumps more efficiently and are therefore faster.
Yes. Can I just say, I'm not massively excited by this.
Maybe you should be, Si, because I've heard they roll over wet routes. pretty well as well. Better than standard size wheels.
I'd have been going even faster when my face hit the ground, Dan. Yes, thank you for that reminder. But anyway, as a reasonably tall rider myself, I will be able to get away with the bigger wheels with no size-related issues. But I kind of sort of feel like maybe they're a bit boring. I don't know. At some point, you have to ask, don't you, whether efficiency is the be-all and end-all of bicycles.
Certainly won't be efficient trying to put it in the back of a car, will it? That's getting hard.
Yeah, good point.
I think they need to get with, you need to get with the time, Si, if I'm perfectly honest.
Well, probably, yes.
The only reason I've said that is for another segue. Is that all right?
Oh, go on, yeah.
Get with the times, a bit like some of the sports federations involved with the Winter Olympics.
There we go.
So there's long been a rumour, as you know, that cyclocross could be included in the Winter Olympic Games, given that it's a winter sport. But recently, it's been gathering quite a lot of pace.
Yeah, to the extent that the sports of skiing, skating, skating being a... Do we say it was the fifth most dangerous sport in America?
Was it?
How is skiing not on the list of dangerous sports?
No idea.
Anyway, biathlon, that could go wrong, couldn't it? Curling, luge, bobsleigh and skeleton. All of those federations have pushed back against this idea of cyclocross being included, saying that were it to be included, it would dilute the brand, heritage and identity that makes the Winter Olympics unique.
They're not happy about it, are
they? They're not,
no. I sort of see their point, because mud is a very different look, isn't it, to pristine white snow and ice.
I mean, this is true. Frozen cyclocross races, though, can be some of the best.
Absolutely.
But no, I do take your point. Or their point, rather. It'd be interesting, wouldn't it? Cross-country running was also being mooted. They said they didn't like that either.
But yeah, I can see that too.
Really?
Well, you can't... Can you run on snow? Maybe you can.
Well, they like running.
I mean,
mud,
what I'm saying is they've been trying cyclocross in like ski resorts ahead of the Winter Olympics, hopefully getting into it. And they do look quite good.
Yeah, it does look good.
It's more rare. I can't get my words out. It's rarer and rarer these days, isn't it? So, still didn't get my words out.
Not really. What was that? Rarer and rarer.
Yeah, you don't get many snowy, icy cyclocross races anymore.
To be fair, there's not that many snowy, icy ski resorts either anymore. Maybe they need to diversify a little bit. Anyway. Moving on from slightly depressing thoughts like that. Two bits of racing news now. Big one, first from Team Amani's. This is the African-based, what has traditionally been a gravel racing team with its roots in Kenya, but which takes riders from all across East Africa.
So a development for 2026 is the introduction of a women's continental road team, which is the first ever for the continent. The idea with it is to allow some of the undeniable talent in East Africa to flourish in international road racing, not only by giving them access to the right events, but providing the right kind of support around them, which takes into consideration the different cultural backgrounds that they might come from.
Yeah, so the aim is to compete in the biggest races in the world, and they're talking like Tour de France, Van Vliet Zwift and Giro d'Italia here, by 2028, which is not long away at all. Ashley Moore-Mapassio, the South African pro, is going to be their team mentor. And I mean, frankly, she seems like she's got her head screwed on.
Very much so, yeah.
So they're in safe hands there.
In more team news, Pinarello has just taken over title sponsorship of the Q36.5 team, which is, of course, home to Tom Pidcock.
Yeah, Q36.5 are a clothing brand who, incidentally, have just released some new foul weather gear, one of which, and if you remember back to the introduction, you'll be quite glad to know that this is what it is, a jersey which is called the Condom.
Better safe than sorry. Does sound safe, that one. I mean, we should stress that this particular jacket is a reusable one, isn't it? For those balking at the £250 price tag.
Yeah, no, not just one use only. So anyway, apparently it was given this nickname, not the official name, by team riders because of its snug and aero fit.
Well, if you get the right size, Si. I've got to be honest, I've never really considered the aerodynamic properties of condoms, personally. The mind boggles at the thought, in fact.
It's true. But you know who will have considered the aerodynamic properties of condoms?
No, who?
Ollie Bridgewood.
Oh, yes. He's probably tested them in a tunnel, hasn't he?
Dare. Right, we should move on now. Before you get cancelled. Before you cancel all of us.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, in completely different news, Pirelli have just launched a new online pressure tool. Basically, what you do is you input a few parameters into the website, including rider weight, surface type, bike weight, and tyre choice, and then it will spit out the most efficient pressure for those tyres.
Nice. Can you specify slippery routes, then?
Well, I think it does assume some level of rider skill, Si. Don't input that part.
I was very skillful. That was why I hit that route so fast. So fast.
I thought so.
Yeah.
Right, I will let it go soon, this joke about your face and your lack of skill, just as soon as those scars from the brambles have disappeared, right?
Well, apparently someone from here at Megabase has just suggested two types of special moisturiser that I should slap on my face to reduce scarring.
Okay.
So there we go.
Well, thanks. Yeah. Right, finally in cycling shorts then, Brompton has now arrived on Zwift.
I do like this, Dan. So Zwift and Brompton have partnered up to create the world's first ever virtual Brompton World Championships. Now, just to remind you all that I am actually second in the world actual Bromptoning.
Yeah.
Or at least I was in 2004. Didn't compete in 2005.
Do you mean 2024? Or were you that good at Bromptons 20 years ago?
When did I say?
2004. I think you might have a mild concussion.
I think I might.
I'm going to have to take back all the jokes.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is going to... Oh, my God. Yes, no, 2024. Not 2004. I tell you what, I probably would have been world champion in 2004. I was a lot fitter then than I am now.
Yeah, and skillful.
Yeah, skillful. I mean, I had some big crashes. Yeah, anyway, let's go there. They started the virtual Brompton World Champs yesterday, and they run through to Sunday. There is still time to register, and you'll be able to ride in some Tweed-inspired in-game Brompton kit. And then you can get the Brompton bike on the Zwift shop.
Mm. I knew you'd like that one, Si, the Brompton World Championships on the Zwift, because Zwift is a safe space, Si.
No
coming off there.
No coming off on Zwift. Or you've got to be doing it really wrong, to fall off. By the way, can I just say that whilst you can put a gravel Brompton, the Brompton G-Line, on an indoor trainer in real life, you can't put an actual Brompton.
Yeah, we've had a lot of questions on that, haven't we?
Yes.
Since our presenter challenge.
It takes quite a lot of modification to put a real Brompton on your indoor trainer. But anyway, if you want more details on it, click on the link in the description below.
/Bodge of the Week now. GlobalCyclingNetwork.com/uploader if you would like to submit your hacks and bodges for this part of the show. The first person that we're going to bring up who submitted theirs from last week is Kevin Stegman. As I've heard that Connor is trying a carbon repair kit, I thought you might like this. It's a bike made completely out of broken carbon parts.
Whoa.
Aside from the repairs, I changed the geometry to fit me better and moved the cabling inside. I did this as a demonstration of what's possible, not necessarily what is sensible. Disclaimer, I do carbon repair professionally. Good disclaimer.
Crikey. Yeah, very useful disclaimer, that one.
I mean, that's amazing. I love this.
I mean, I really like it.
Of parts on this bike.
Yeah, tri-spoke front wheel, an old school Simplon monocoque carbon frame, zip cranks. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know what? Right, I do think this is a good thing to bring up because for a long, 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 long time, everyone thought that when you broke something carbon fiber, you just stuck it in the bin.
Mm.
And actually, it's such a repairable material, isn't it? And it often...
Done by the right person, yes.
Yeah, exactly. Often it's significantly cheaper to get a threshing repaired than it would be to get a replacement. And it keeps it out of landfill.
Yeah.
And it's still as good as it was before.
I love that.
Yeah, top marks.
Old school positioning of the brake lever hoods, I would say.
Very old school, yeah.
Like sort of Sean Yates style-y.
Yeah.
It's a hack from me.
It's a hack from me as well, yeah.
Great stuff.
Next up, Seamus Woods sent this one in. I designed and 3D printed this wall mount to store my new bike indoors over winter. The frame rests on two wooden dowels, so it sits cleanly against the wall. Oh, yeah, so he's 3D printed some little brackets to hold the wooden doweling rods in place. And it's a rather nice looking Trek Imunda, I believe.
Look like little faces from Head On, don't they?
Yeah, they do, actually, yeah. Oh, I like that, that's cool. And they're also mounted, you'll be pleased to know, to take into account the sloping top tube of the bike, but to keep the wheels horizontal.
Very good.
That is neat.
This is the sort of thing I would never have thought of.
No, me neither.
I'd have just mounted the two parts horizontal and then put the bike on and like, oh. Now the bike's sloping downwards.
Yeah.
Hack for me as well, then.
I mean, this is a hack just for that alone, I think, really.
Next up, this one from EG. I tape hot hands pouches to the front of each grip to create heated grips. Lets me wear thinner winter gloves, which I prefer. If you're going to try it, my best tip is to position the pouch so that your fingertips are on the pouch, but you're not resting your palm on it. This position interferes less with your actual grip on the bar and it concentrates the warmth on your fingers where I usually need it the most.
I really like this, Dan.
Yeah?
I mean, the questions in my mind are these reusable? Or is it like a one hit? So if it's one hit, then I sort of feel like maybe it's a more
like
sustainable solution.
Does look like a bit of a one hit wonder.
Does, doesn't it? But I mean, yeah, why not?
Well, yeah, I'm with him on the fingers thing. They do get cold far before the palms, don't they?
I mean, they do.
Good
yeah.
Positioning. Yeah, I'm not sure where you'd put it on the drop bars because it's difficult. I always on the hoods.
Yeah, I am as well. Mm. I'm sort of like thinking that it's kind of good, but also kind of limited at the same time. Can we be on the fence?
I'm going to say bodge because for the simple reason, I can't remember the last time we said anything was a bodge on this part of the show.
Oh, good point. Yeah, massive bodge, that one, isn't it?
Sorry, EG, you just came at the wrong time.
Yeah, okay. Katrina Eich said, we all dislike Zone 2 rides in comparison to pretty much any other ride. And with a busy family life, my husband doesn't want to waste his outdoor riding time on them. So he set up an indoor trainer under his height-adjustable desk in the home office and now gets in 6 to 8 hours Whoa. Per week in Zone 2 during meetings and work training. It's set so he can still type and use his computer and headset, plastic mats underneath to protect the floor. And at Zone 2, he can easily talk and focus at work. This is surely a piss take.
I was going to say, no, I don't think it is. I've got another anecdote for you. You know when I was doing the Zwift group sessions at the Gravel World Championships, there were more than one. There were about three or four people talked about how they were in work and on a meeting for part of the session. And they were not Zone 2 sessions. I mean, obviously you can go at whatever pace you wanted, but they were interval sessions. Yeah, I think I would find it weird if I was on a Zoom/Google call and somebody was visibly riding a bike.
Well, what would be worse is if they weren't visibly riding a bike, but you still just saw their torso and head sort of like gently bobbing up and down, getting increasingly sweaty.
I guess you can turn the camera off and then just
that's a red flag, isn't it? If someone turns their camera off on a call, you know they're no longer concentrating on the call. But also...
Or they've put their face through the brambles.
That's true. That's true. I think me at Zone 2, you would 100% be able to tell that I'm riding a bike. Like, I'd be slightly out of breath.
I'm going to say hack if used outside of meetings.
Hmm.
I'm going to say bodge if used in meetings. But, there's a lot more people that are working remotely on more calls than you and I are on, Si.
Well, I mean, you...
Let's pass their judgment, maybe, for this
You
one.
Do your Zwifting in work time, Dan, as we've already established. Yeah. I think that if there was some kind of proof that Katrina's husband was still productive at work and this low-intensity training was beneficial, then I'll say hack.
Right.
But I'm remain cynical about this.
All right.
We'll skip.
Stay on the fence then.
Yeah.
I got five this week. The last one comes in from Miles to Ride, who put, at Handsling, we love building custom bikes for our clients. We also love minimising our waste, so we reduce, reuse and recycle anything and everything that we can. This time, we've used a race-damaged chain ring that had lost some teeth and months of small chain offcuts to create our workshop clock. Perfect for ensuring we deliver always on time.
I mean, to be fair, that is pretty cool, isn't it? So, for podcast listeners, this is a SRAM Red chainring set, because they are machined out of the same piece of metal, you remember, with some chain very artistically looped around with 12 different circles, each one with what looks like hand-drawn and hand-cut-out numbers, which are possibly not quite as sleek as the rest of it, but... I think it's cool.
I think it's great, yeah, I love that.
It does, I'm pretty sure...
I've got a lot of time for that.
Hey, I thought you could send back your old SRAM chain rings and they would recycle them for you. I mean, I suppose arguably
as
nothing...
As in replace?
I'm pretty sure they said when they launched it that you'd get a discount on the replacement one.
Right.
I guess nothing is more recycled than this, which is like, there's no more energy gone into turning this into something cool.
I'm saying hack for that one. Love it.
I like that. I mean, it's a sexy chain ring, isn't it? Let's put it that way.
Right, thanks for all the submissions. More this time next week.
It's time now for Caption Competition, that part of the show where you get a chance to get your hands on a coveted GCN Camelback water bottle. All you got to do is put a witty caption in the comments section down below the video. We'll start, of course, with the results, though, from last week.
Last week's photo was this one from before the Saitama Criterium in Japan with Jonas Vingegaard, we think, sketching a drawing of himself. Our winner this week is Cafe Club Rides, who put, when asked which Grand Tours he would be riding in 2026, Jonas's response was a little sketchy.
Nice. I like that.
Very good, Cafe Club Rides. Write to us on Facebook with your address and we'll get a bottle sent out to you. Very different photo for you this week of Jonas Vingegaard with a funny hat on. As ever, I will get you started. Jonas Vingegaard already has his next target on his mind.
See what you did there, mate.
Thanks, mate.
Any idea why he's wearing a hat?
Absolutely
like that, with a target
no
on it?
Idea. I think he's probably just thankful he didn't have to wear a sumo outfit, which they seem to have got rid of, but only slightly less ridiculous, isn't it?
Could you briefly summarise the news headlines that were popped up last week about Jonas Vingegaard's Grand Tour objectives for next year? From last week?
Well, I think he really wants to do the Giro d'Italia next year, and if he does so and wins it, he'll be the eighth rider in history to have completed all three, or won all three. And he'll do that, of course, before Pogacar has.
Ooh.
The question is whether Visma Lisa Bike's team think it's important for him to do the Giro d'Italia next year, or indeed if they think that he can beat Pogacar with the perfect lead up to the Tour de France, which in my mind looks increasingly doubtful.
Doesn't it?
From Pogacar.
Interesting. We'll wait and see. Okay. Thanks for summarising that, mate.
No worries. Right, put your captions in the comment section down below. We'll pick a winner next week. Just before we let you know what's coming up on the channel this week, we picked out a load of comments from last week's videos. We'll start, as we always do, with a few from underneath the GCN show, which is about the inevitability of suspension coming to gravel bikes. Mark IZ90L put, next will be why we all need a flat bar on a full suspension gravel bike. Yes, the evolution into mountain bikes.
I know what you're saying, Mark, but I still think that if you stick a flat bar on a full suspension gravel bike, that you lose the kind of efficiency of it being a gravel bike in the first place.
Although you do get an easier way of keeping your hands warm with a warming pad.
That is true.
Rolux 4853, but my wife just bought the Trek Checkout SL7. It's the most versatile and amazing bike I've ever ridden. if you're into single trails but like drop bars and 100k plus rides through forest, it's absolutely amazing.
I love that comment.
Yeah.
Does your wife like the bike, or have you just nicked it off her?
Well, either his wife bought it for him, or he's just nicking his wife's bike. Either way.
I mean, share and share alike, right? Maybe she was busy that day, or she was riding a road bike, and Rolex was just able to sneak in a quick 100k ride through a forest. CCSH4DN said, as someone who owns a road bike and a full suspension cross-country bike, I feel like I'm in a group of people who would end up having only one bike if I got a full suspension gravel bike, especially when I get older, where I can't ride gnarlier trails. I don't know why you can't ride gnarly trails when you get older. You absolutely can.
Check back in with me in 20 years.
So. Yeah.
Gilbert Tang put, or he quoted me from last week, I get into vans quite a lot, Daniel Lloyd 2025. Yeah, as I said that, I thought that would come back to haunt me.
Noah Froyo, sorry Dan, Si's got the mitophagy correct. Check it out! Yes, it's the selective degradation of mitochondria by autophagy. I will just ride my sea lion out of frame now.
Meanwhile, Delver CCR put mitophagy. Dan got it right. Same as autophagy.
What?
I know, we're still confused. Jordan Thorpe, but has Dan dyed his hair? The answer is no. I get this quite. I think it's something to do with the lighting or something on, I don't know, on the camera or whatever. But there's a few people that ask me over the years, have I dyed my hair just for men, that sort of thing.
I assumed that you do.
Really? You can see the grey on the side, surely.
Well, I know, but that's the bit that's harder to dye, isn't it? I don't know.
No, I've never. Well, no, I did dye my hair when I was about 20. I'd like. What do you call it? Highlights.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
I was thinking the other day, with my increasingly greying locks, that maybe I should just go full grey.
What, just dye it grey?
Just dye it grey, yeah.
Instead
of dyeing it brown, dye it grey. Yeah. Just rock it.
That would really make your red brambles things pop.
I will wait until that subsides.
Yeah. Right, anyway, back to the comments.
It's back to the comments,
underneath, good pain versus bad pain, when should you stop pushing through? Philip Cooper put, the worst pain I've ever experienced riding a bike was psychological pain from getting dropped by people on mountain bikes. Then I replaced my rear cassette from 11 to 36.
There you go. One way to ease the pain, isn't it? Yep. Jim K. Jeffrey said, for me, I was far too intense with bicycling and skiing for a long time in my life. I became far healthier once my goal became simply spending time with the sport I love. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay, fair enough.
Roger Simmons, but I can't be the only one watching who had to Google hot desking. I actually think there might be a new meaning of hot desking, having seen the bike underneath the desk for work meetings.
Well, remotely. Yeah. Maybe. I thought that was a universal term.
I did as well.
Desking.
Yeah. I mean, if I've heard of it, I assume most people had.
Absolutely, yeah. Right, underneath the great video that Connor and Alex shot about carbs versus protein, Andrew McAllister said, Connor wrote this episode just so he could expense his breakfast on GCN's tab. Yes, one of the most expensive videos we've made all year.
Along the same line, Stephen Russell put, have you noticed how many of Connor's challenges and tests involve eating? Dan may train on the company's time, but it seems Connor eats on the company dime.
Indeed he does. Connor still being the only man I've ever seen to just munch an entire 500-gram tub of yoghurt in one sitting.
Oh, wow.
I mean, that is quite a lot of yoghurt, isn't it?
I have 250 grams a day. And it's half the amount, but...
Half the amount and in a day, whereas he has sitting.
I have a breakfast.
250 grams of yoghurt?
Yeah.
No wonder you're looking hench.
Yeah, that's a total of 25 grams of protein right there, Si.
I mean, that is quite a lot of yoghurt, though, isn't it?
Doesn't feel like too much.
Is it not?
No.
What do you have it with?
Well, now you're asking. I have chia seeds, pumpkin seed, mixed nuts, flax seed, raspberries, strawberries, blueberries, pomegranate.
Is this your elixir for eternal life?
I mean, I just think it's quite good for me.
Is it nice?
Lovely. Oh, yeah. And the special ingredient is, and I get organic version of cinnamon.
Organic cinnamon.
It's there so cheap. Go. Organic cinnamon is so cheap. Anyway. Right.
Well, I'm all for that, mate. I'm all for organic cinnamon, 100%. Okay. Right, Croc Limus. Do you think that's how you pronounce it?
Limace.
No, Croc Limace. Anyway, if I had 8 eggs in the morning before a ride, I would fart so hard it would make me faster than Poggy.
Secret to success.
Great, there we go.
Right then, coming up on the channel this week, on Thursday, winter sucks for riding, but I love it. Is this Connor again?
This is Connor. Can
did
I just
it involve eating on expenses?
Yes, can I just say, right, so this was due to be filmed and Connor decided that actually the weather was too bad that day. So despite loving winter riding, it wasn't okay for filming because it was a bit wet. So Connor instead rescheduled and it happened to be pretty much the nicest day of the year.
Of the winter, yeah.
Well, of the year, basically. It was absolutely stunning. A little bit chilly, but, I mean, blooming nice and sunny.
Great stuff.
So, yeah, we'll see how that one comes out.
Big one for you on Saturday. Si mentioned it last week. It's the Bolivia Epic.
It is a big one, yes. I'm so excited about this. So, fingers crossed, it's ready to roll on Saturday, and you all get to watch this. So, make a date in your diaries. Put it on your TV, one of those.
Mm. And then on Sunday, one of two videos might come out. It'll either be my update.
I don't think you can say
yes,
that.
Yes, we can. Got two in the can. Well, no, we haven't got two in the can. That's why we're still trying to decide. It'll either be my 12-month update, as we mentioned last week. Hadn't got the VO2 max test done, but as we record this, I'm doing it tomorrow. So we could get that one out. I've also been working on a far more serious video, actually, about the state of safety in pro cycling, which kind of appears to be getting worse as the speeds get higher. So one of those will be on Sunday.
You've been working on that for literally months, hence why we don't want to rush it out.
Well, exactly, yeah. I'm a bit nervous about getting it out in terms of making sure I've done an all right job on it. So
well, I think you have done an all right job, mate. It's looking good. Okie doke. We were just filming the GCN show, weren't we? I can't remember.
Oh, don't. We're gonna have some very concerned comments, I think.
No, I'm pretty sure I've not got a concussion. Pretty sure.
Right, I'll see you next week with Connor.